Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to continue our expectations series today, talking about a couple of Ravens, Deontay Hardy and Justin Madubuike, one offense and one defense, as this series has been, if you've been following it, and an opportunity to talk to a large portion of the Baltimore analyst community today. It'll be Dev Panchwa. Dev, how are you doing?
I am fantastic. Thanks for making time for this, and I know we've had many conversations before. So I appreciated off-season conversations at that. So this is going to be, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a fun conversation around two players that I actually did some homework on amazingly. So this works out.
Okay, well, good. One of the fun things about this series is you get to pick your pairing from among a whole big set of pairings. So why did you want to talk about Hardy and Madubuike specifically?
I'll admit, you know, because the way you set it up is actually quite ingenious, because you can't cheat. You can't pick
two good guys,
well, yeah, essentially, or popular guys, right? Yeah. So I think with Madubuike, it's kind of like I already have like a lot of information on him and just things that I looked at last season. So that's kind of a guy that I'm looking forward to talking about him. Just more like I already had some some knowledge there. But with Hardy, I actually had to do a little digging when they signed him. I was very intrigued. The more I uncovered, I really think. And I don't want to give it away. I just think he's going to be a big factor in the season. So I just saw morally, I think I was more attracted to the Hardy component.
Okay.
But hey, and Madubuike is one of the best players in the league. So a chance to talk about him. And there's a huge question about him that I have, or kind of I think needs to be resolved this season.
So, okay. Well, we'll keep that a secret till the second half of the show, and start with Deontay Hardy, who was signed after as a UFA after four seasons in New Orleans, another one in Buffalo. Very small guy for fans of Baltimore football in the 1970s. They might remember Howard Stevens being a very short punt returner in that era, punt returner, kick returner. Hardy is 5'6", 170 pounds, slot receiver and kick and punt returner.
Yeah.
27.
Oh, go ahead.
27 in December. What do you see his role on this team? Let's just start with that.
Yeah, so at baseline, yeah, they, it's pretty obvious with the special teams return rule change. Mm-hmm. And them, I think they're adopting it from the XFL, or is it – I can't remember exactly, right? They're kind of coming up with it from that league as inspiration. But it does – it makes the return man viable again, right? So that's starting point. And he is unique because of the fact that he's got kick and punt return experience, and he's done it at an extremely high level. I think he had a touchdown in that Buffalo-Miami game that was – to decide the division last year. So he's a prime weapon in the special teams return area. That's a given. I also think he has some sneaky value though as a vertical option. If you look at last season for this team, Aguilar was about the closest thing they kind of had to somebody that could, and Zay of course has it, but like there wasn't a guy that just vertical speed, really, you know, speed routes down the field. Now they have at least two guys because they brought Tez Walker in and drafted him. So I think there's also that element that they wanted to add as an option. He's got some good depth and he's been productive for a fourth kind of receiver, right? So I don't think you sneeze at that either. But those are the things that stand out to start.
Okay, let's start with the kick return component because I think that's the thing the Ravens really got him for. And I'm very impressed with how far ahead the Ravens have been in terms of figuring out how they're going to need to take advantage of these new rules. They're probably involved in the development of them, but they also, they went out and got Chris Board, who's one of the best special teams tacklers. He doesn't really have any value as a linebacker in my opinion, but he's one of the best special teams tacklers in the entire league. Bring him back is clearly a, concession to this, because the return games, both punt and kickoff, have been basically taken out of the game the last couple of years. They haven't been a big part, but I've been very impressed with that, and I think Hardy is the obviously at the heart and soul of what they think they could do in their return game.
Oh, no doubt, and I agree 100%. They are one of the best, if not the best, special teams team, I think, in the last 10 years, right? It's the data and the statistics bear that out. I think New England has also been there, up there, and they put a premium on it. But in particular, Ken, I really believe that these rules, because one thing that stood out to me was Eric DaCosta was asked about it, and he said, nobody's going to know until we play whether or not a return guy, or really the coverage units, to your point, Board in particular, guys like that, like who's going to succeed? Is it traditionally you had receiver type guys that could fly down the field? Is that going to work? Or do you need the, you know, bigger guys to get off press? Yeah.
I agree with DaCosta's comment, by the way, what you're saying. We're not going to know. But the good thing about the Baltimore Ravens is they're being proactive about how they're thinking about it. And they're going out and getting the players that could potentially get the job done for them. They're starting with pretty good coverage units anyway. But I think if you look at their draft also, I really did not like the Sanusi-Kane draft pick. But if you want to figure out how's he going to help the Ravens, it's on special teams. He could be a dime back, but he's not a back end safety of any sort. Not free and not strong, not half field, not any of that. He's a guy who will help them on special teams. And I think that they probably went into their calculus in that seventh round and saying, well, we've got a few other players we could think about here. Who do we want to lock up and not, you know, rely upon the UDFA process?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Again, I do think now with what's going on, this is, special teams is really going to tilt things in a big way. And the component is that are all the teams prepared? And I don't, there's an edge there, right? There's teams that are prepared, that made the moves accordingly, whether that's signing these premier return guys. Also, to your point, you know, maybe they put more stock in those back end draft picks because they really want able special teamers. So I like that. They from a competitive standpoint, they might be able to win one or two games because of this. And Hardy is one of the best in the league. I don't think, you know, I think he had a bit of a drop recently from, I think, when he was with the Saints, right? So statistically, you know, all those things, but like, he's still got it and he's electric. And the one thing I'll say is, DaCosta's right, but I do think there might be an advantage more to the guys with the wiggle and ability to win in space, kind of, just versus those, you know, you had a Devin Duvernay who had the speed and he just needed the cut in the alley and he would take it, right? So I think they may need somebody that has more ability to do both, kind of, or give them a little bit more of a complete return ability.
Right. I mean, I do believe Duvernay is probably faster than Hardy, but the he probably also has better contact balance and whatnot being lower. But they don't have Devin Duvernay anyway. He's gone to Jacksonville. It's not an issue. I think they probably would have been okay with him as a kickoff returner here this year, to be honest about it. Mm-hmm. But Hardy's not a bad second choice. He probably gives you a little bit as a receiver. We probably want to talk about that as well. Did want to go back to, I mean, as a rookie, Deontay Hardy was AP1 and Pro Bowl player for the Saints. And he hasn't since, but he's done a little bit more as a receiver over that period. Some things to like, some things not to like. But getting into his receiver thing, he's had 113 career targets in 5 seasons. So it's not like he's been on the field a ton. But 113 is about 22 per season, 23 per season at 8.3 yards per target certainly is something.
Yeah. No, exactly. There is incredible wide receiver ability, back end depth, back end bench. You could do worse. And I think his most productive season, he had around 400 something yards with the Saints, which is not insignificant. And he was a legitimate factor in their deep ball game. So the other thing is, I think even with the Bills, with Allen, there was some routes that he won downfield. And I know, just because I do observe the Bills a little bit more than other teams, like although they, you know, on paper, Diggs is that kind of that guy. You look at the rest of their, and Gabe Davis was that guy. I mean, that was really the depth that they needed, though, was a guy like Hardy. So he came in and he ran some important routes for them. So again, if the Ravens are stuck, you could do worse. And sometimes you just need that tactical ability for a receiver to threaten down the field. Oops, I'm not sure if you're on mute.
The other thing Hardy, I think, gives him is a gadget player who takes away, who could take some of the role that Duvernay had at times in the past, not as much last year, honestly, that Hill has had at times, that Mitchell has had at times. Obviously, Mitchell's not going to be available to start the season, and that has been forced upon Flowers at times. And that is the last component is the one I really, really don't like. I don't like having Flowers forced to play a gadget role. I think he's much better served running routes down the field for the Ravens. Now, that doesn't mean he does only that, because you have to have complementary routes to go with that force the defense to play you honestly. But the best thing that Flowers can do is attract the attention of two defenders. That is the best thing he can do for this offense. That's going to free up a lot of space that can be used effectively by Monk and Jackson and the Ravens tight ends and other wide receivers.
That's a good point as well, because I do remember in the red zone, the Bills did get kind of creative with Hardy, right? They had him sneak out I think he scored a touchdown catching the football, just on what you're saying, as a gadget player. So they have some options there. And if somebody blows their coverage, he's got good hands. He's been able to convert those downfield throws. And if you're mostly involved as a down the field threat, you're automatically less successful, right? It's like the moments that you make those catches can really stand out, because it's a higher percentage of not being successful usually on those routes. So that makes sense. So the fact that he's been able to win a few of those, I think that's helpful.
Yeah, that's always good. But you get better yak opportunities. It's definitely a trade-off. There's definitely a lower catch percentage involved in those. One of the things that has been probably the biggest shortcoming for Hardy in his career has been there have been a high number of interceptions on the balls thrown to him, 9 and 113 career targets. That's way too high, obviously. You wouldn't want an 8% interception rate for anybody in today's game where interception rates are around 2%. But that included 6 in 2021, which was his big year. In fact, he's never had a good passer rating throwing to him, never as high as 100. In fact, I don't think it's ever been as high as about 94. But it's 84.5 passer rating throwing to him career and 75.8 in 2023 with the Bills when Allen had a couple interceptions on balls thrown to him. That has been an ongoing problem.
Interesting.
Some of that is overthrows. Some of it is tips. And there's probably things he can do to reduce that. If you're a short receiver, you don't want to be going up high for the ball and just getting a little piece of it with your hand. That's usually a very dangerous thing that is going to give a back end bracketed defender more time to make that play.
Yeah. Technique. And then to your point, the size factor. I think the other thing is that he also probably there's some of that that gets back to he's primarily used that way. And those are lower percentage plays. So maybe you have some shot plays that are just well defended because they were trying to trick the defense and it just didn't happen. Cause it's almost like an all or nothing proposition.
Right.
But that is interesting. Yeah. Something to
look
out for.
He's not the sort of receiver as a deep threat though, that you throw the ball up and hope he catches the ball one-on-one on an island.
No.
You outthrow the defender if you're throwing the ball to Deontay Hardy, because he's not going to win that contested catch.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 100%. So in that sense, is it him? Is it a product of some of the execution or the play calling? Mm-hmm. It's probably a little bit of both. And what I envisioned is he's the guy that if you are, let's say, heavy, formation, maybe this is another area, right? Like you're on one side of the field and you're trying to flip the field with the vertical throw down the field, vertical conversion, right? That's where you could win and catch the defense off guard. And so there's little things. I mean, how much he factors in, I'm not entirely sure, just because you don't want to be too predictable either. If he comes on the field and you're never using him, then it's going to be obvious why he's there. So it's just, but it's still, yeah, it's something that they can work with that is a key or is an added element, I should say, than what they didn't have before.
He's pretty consistently run the ball about 4 times per year, 19 career carries for 123 yards, 6.5 yards per carry. Can easily fulfill the jet sweep / misdirection role within the Ravens run game, which is very important because the Ravens can show you 4 very regular and significant components of misdirection. And they have more in their bag, but 4 very, very basic ones. 1 is counter plays. Okay. 2 is anything involving the option. 3 are jet motion carries. And 4, I have forgotten for right now, which is always embarrassing when you say there's a list of 4. But yeah, I forgot what it is.
We're really far from the season starting, though. No pressure.
Yes, it's the preseason for analysts, too. but anyway, let's move on to what is a good season, what is a great season for Deontay Hardy.
So I believe a good season for him would be, he makes an impact. He I'm trying to think of a good way. Like, does he score a touchdown? Maybe he gets one touchdown between the return game. He's consistently healthy and available, and I think he gives you some shot plays. Maybe he can help even win a game on a down the field touchdown, something like that. Like, so he's involved enough as a receiver as well. But I think a great season would be obvious. He's gotten to all pro status before.
Let me go good first, then we'll come back to great in a second.
Got it.
So for a good season, I say he takes the kickoff and punt return roles, provides relative value in each, such that the Ravens finish in the top half of the league. I don't think that's too hard of a goal, or it shouldn't be. I think the Ravens are on top of things, particularly with the kick return side of that. He's got to avoid fumbles. He creates both value with the ball and valuable misdirection for the Ravens run game, both very important. But the value with the ball is actually a lot probably less important than the misdirection. So he'll get a few carries, maybe 5, 6, 7 carries, 6.5 yards per carry would be fine. And some misdirection would be terrific. I want to see him integrated offensively by Monken as a player who threatens space with no particular expectations on the results. So again, you're gonna use Deonte Hardy down the field. Great. That's if he can take an extra defender, that's fantastic. If he only draws man coverage, then you're kind of wasting him. Otherwise, I want to get him in space into places where he has a chance to make a play with the football after the catch. And that's not always easy in the middle of the field, and it's sometimes dangerous getting Hardy the ball in the middle of the field with the interceptions he's had. But those are the things to me that would make a good season. No specific expectation on yards per target or yards overall with a good season.
Yeah, no, makes sense. I think you captured it. Moving to grade, which I kind of spilled on, but actually there's more to it. So again, I think it's clear if he gets back to that elite return status that he had before. So that's number one. You talked about Devin Duvernay being an all-pro, and if he's an all-pro, right, I think that's attainable because he's done it before. Mm-hmm. Multiple touchdowns, impact in the return game. He's somebody that coaches will have to account for, game plan around. As a receiver, you kind of hit on a lot of things that I thought are good for him that could be great for him, really. Like you said, is he influencing and getting able to help Zay Flowers, Bateman, Aguilar, these players get open? So just his presence on the field, again, ability to take the top off. And I guess if you're pushing it further, can he even give you about 300 yards? I don't know, about 400 something yards, because then there might be something to the fact that they have some injuries. I think that might signal he's playing a lot when he doesn't need to. So again, can he be productive enough, win down the field, open things up, to your point, spacing wise, and be a factor? Maybe not quite a fourth receiver, but if you have, I mean, the other thing is Tez Walker's a rookie, right? So we don't know what to expect. Is he going to factor into that? And I think he can. So those are my expectations if we're talking about a great season.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I think I've got similar here, and I didn't go with a lot of specifics statistically, but I did go at a higher level than good. Excels as both a kick and punt returner, and the Ravens stay ahead of the curve in maximizing the value of the new kickoff return game. Plays about 25% of the offensive snaps. He's played between 7 and 36% in his seasons to date in the NFL to spell Zay Flowers primarily. Okay, so Flowers isn't having to play every snap as he has in the past. Monken and Lamar find a way to scheme him into higher value results on offense with an interception rate significantly reduced from his career 8% rate. Honestly, if that's – it's not – Hardy is not going to be someone I want to see on offense if they're throwing 4% interceptions on the balls his way. It's not going to be something that's good. Becomes an extended play threat with trust from Lamar. Yards per target of 8.0 or more, primarily in a gadget role. And again, I'm not setting anything up, but if you took the 8.0 yards per target, he'd have to get 50 targets to get to 400 yards, folks. I don't think, I cannot envision a circumstances where that's a good thing for the Ravens.
Yeah, I agree. That's why that number is probably not going to be very exciting. Yeah. And it probably was a similar factor for the Saints too, right?
So, yeah, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. So move on and talk about Justin Madubuike.
Sure.
So obviously we know he cashed in on his contract year. He'll be a Raven through at least 2025. There's a $3 million savings in 26. Not likely the Ravens would bite on that because you have to find a player who can do what Madubuike does for $3 million, but then $11.5 million in savings in 27. So it's a fairly player-friendly contract in terms of he's likely to get three of his four seasons in. The only other thing I'd say to start off is that we're kind of in Lamar Jackson 2020 territory right now. Lamar Jackson 2019 had one of the greatest seasons of all time. Justin Madubuike in 2023 had a season that is so far out of the normal range for an interior defensive lineman, or for him in particular with regard to the rest of his career, to believe that he could really ever repeat it in terms of the sack number specifically.
Yeah, you actually hit on my initial front tease.
Sorry.
No, it's not actually. It's just more along the, I guess, the general macro idea of what can he do? What will he be able to kind of own up to the contract that they gave him? And I know a lot of the talk was whether this was a one-hit wonder. I don't think he is a one-hit wonder at all. Like, I think my personal opinion is a lot of his breaking out is attributed to factors that make sense, which is he got snaps. I think, you know, he had played behind a little bit behind Calais Campbell and some of these older guys, so he got the opportunity. But then he started converting more, and I think Chuck Smith has had a tremendous impact on him, and he just was able to win a lot of those one-on-ones. But to your point, he also probably benefited from a lot of sacks that he fell into.
Oh, sure.
That guys that just were teeing it up for him, and he cashed in. So, literally. But does that mean if he comes down from that and he gets, you know, 9 sacks and 8 sacks consistently, that's still really good, probably. And if he influences double teams and other things and helps the defense in other ways. I mean, it's going to be relative to me, like, if he can own up to that contract. At the same time, I think they got a little bit of a discount because they got ahead of it and signed him before these other top tier tackles lined up after him. So I think it's a good deal ultimately. And I think he continues to be a top upper echelon defensive tackle, whether he's like top 5 versus top 10, I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're right, by the way, about the contract point, is that, you know, the Ravens kind of got ahead of the curve this time in terms of a big steepening of IDL salaries, and, you know, signing them when they did, I think is going to end up looking like a pretty cheap contract by the end of this deal. But it won't look super cheap because I think he makes 30 and 30.5 million his last 2 years. So it won't look super cheap unless he keeps playing very well, but it could still be a bargain, certainly over the entire 4-year period. It's just people look at a 24-year-old or whatever he is, he might be 26 right now even, but he's in that range, and say he's only going to get better. Well, no, you know, he will be fortunate to consolidate most of what he's done statistically. He probably cannot improve much, even in his pyramid of pressures. And he's an atypical pyramid, meaning that he's got more finishes relative to a fairly narrow base of total pressures. That base of total pressures needs to improve. And probably it will, because they'll do a little bit of what Kansas City has done with Chris Jones and use him more as a matchup player to get those first pressure opportunities. But it still may mean somebody else gets the sack. Mm-hmm. Because somebody else is doing it. He's a great pursuit player. He's done some things very well, but he owes a lot of money to Jadeveon Clowney if there's ever a settle up
I think that's a total fair assessment. And I think the world of him, by the way. I think he's a phenomenal player. And I've been that way for pretty much the entirety of his career. And I've been waiting and just hoping. And I knew he'll crack through. It just made sense, right? But to your point, temper expectations. He's not Chris Jones. He's not like at that exact level of defensive tackle. And that's okay. He can really still, I mean, if you're talking about this defense and the top 4 players and some, between Roquan, Kyle Hamilton, Madubuike, and Humphrey, right? I think he's going to factor into that top 4 for a while. It's just, and then how does he take care of himself, right? We see some of these D tackles that play pretty well into their early 30s. I think that's still attainable. But he is someone ultimately you want being the hunter, and he has to be uncorked to be, and for them to commit the money that they did, I think they understand that. That's what we need him to do when it's, you know, when it's 3rd and 9. Can he get to Mahomes in that game? So that's what they need him to do. And I think the stats are kind of relative to assessing him now.
Yeah, they've certainly set him up by having complementary players with him in the form of Pierce and Jones, who were exceptionally good running partners, mates for him. In terms of being guys who demand double teams. If you don't double team them, they will wreak havoc themselves in the middle and create pocket compression that'll lead to wins for other players. But he's a special talent. And by the way, I want to come out with one of the things I said about Madubuike last year that really didn't happen to be true. He had 59% of the snaps in 2022. I thought because of second half ineffectiveness from Matabike, and also the fact that he played better in games in 22 where he had had less snaps, that a reduced snap load would have really done him well, that he would have been a better as a situational pass rusher, moved to 47% of snaps, maybe 48% of snaps, and you'd get a much better Justin Matabike. What happens? He goes to 65% of snaps, and he turns in the year he just had in terms of just being an unbelievably dominant player.
And you confirmed it because I...
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tap, also on them. Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Don't dig into the data all the time in terms of these things, right? I look at it after the fact from people like you who I feel like do a great job of gathering the information and actually putting the data behind it and the math behind it. But I just looking on the field, you notice this uptick, and then you see last season when he wasn't always as consistent, but he was very impactful given the snaps that he got, right? And I think it's just a matter of the numbers weren't quite there. I think he was at 5.5 sacks, but that's still pretty good. But if you look at it again, they must have realized, no, he needs that uptick, and we can't have something standing in his way. They did take a bit of a gamble with that, but it paid off in terms of like not pursuing somebody that would take his snaps in terms of a veteran.
That's true.
Pierce.
And you know, they had a big problem going into 23 because Calais Campbell had just left the team. So it was a big question of how were they going to replace those snaps. And they had Travis Jones ready to go, and he was a big part of the long-term solution. They signed Broderick Washington, of course, and Pierce, they didn't have any true reason to believe that he'd be healthy for a full season, and yet he was. He played his career high in snaps. Mm-hmm. That was pretty terrific. But the other thing is they used 2.20 defensive linemen per play, which is very high by Ravens standards. The Ravens, in most of their Rush, Nickel, Martindale years, and their race car heavy usage of the race car with four outside linebackers and no defensive linemen a lot of the time, were in there with 1.9 or even 1.76, I believe, 1 year defensive linemen per play. So that's a big difference. So if you look at 2.2 defensive linemen per play, and you've got five defensive linemen who are splitting all those snaps because they were all healthy this last year, means the average one has to play 44% of the snaps. Mm-hmm. That is a very high percentage by Ravens historic totals.
Interesting. Yeah, and it's a fair point because how many times do we remember seeing some of these? I mean, they did rotate, right? But the core guys were on the field a lot. Yeah. And for that to work, you need a guy that's a workhorse like Madubuike, and that's a huge value. If you don't have to sub him out as much and he plays those snaps, because he is a force multiplier. Again, if things in terms of attracting attention, and he'll get that even more this season because teams know what he's capable of doing. Yeah. If you're not putting, you know, extra blockers on him.
Yeah. He migrated towards more of a pass defense role this year, 592 out of 849 snaps, which is a pretty high percentage, but there were several other Ravens who were in that same range, whereas players like Urban and Broderick Washington played more run snaps, or Harrison or Tavius Robinson on the outside. But the three IDL they have right now who can rush the passer, this is a more impressive group than I think they've ever had. And that's really saying something given some of the early 2000 teams. And, you know, having Anthony Weaver or Marcus Douglas and, of course, Sam Adams, Sam Adams never really had that one guy who was with him in those 2 years who was an outstanding interior pass rusher.
No.
Now they've got three.
Yeah. Well, to your point, they were more run stuffers than anything else. I know they had, you know, those days they had Chase and they had Dalton and those guys, but those guys couldn't, they couldn't get to the quarterback. But Jones, and I don't want to steal anybody's thunder for that potential episode, right? But he is excellent, and I think is a legitimate force rushing the passer. Michael Pierce has always been an underrated pass rusher. He'll get you 3-4 sacks. He's going to cause problems if you don't block him up front. And he's always been compared to Brandon Williams, but I always thought those are two pretty different players in terms of what they represent. Pierce is always, I think, a more complete player and a more – frankly, yeah, like that quickness, that burst, he's got that going. And then you've got one of the best pass rushers in the league at IDL. So they all make each other better. And if somebody's going to benefit, like you said, somebody's going to win because the other guy has to. You have to put attention to one of the other two players, right? So I think you're right. I agree. I was trying to think back, and Haloti Ngata is the best, I think, pass rusher, interior pass rusher since Madubuike. Mm-hmm. But it's a very short list. It's two guys, I think historically.
Yeah, Calais Campbell was very good, and you could say that maybe Campbell and Madubuike in 22 would have been almost at the same level as the three of these guys last year. But the fact that they never even really threatened to play Rush Nickel last year, and they played it maybe about 10 to 15 snaps for the whole year, which tells you that's nothing for the Ravens. That's kicking an outside linebacker inside to take one of your defensive line spots. They just didn't do that. They had their three guys. They rotated them two at a time, even on passing downs, and they had two of their big three interior guys on the field. And, hey, they had 60 sacks, so I guess it worked.
If you look at the teams that are able to impact the pass rush, if they're able to impact on the pass rush level the most, it's the inside pass rushers. And they knew what they had with Madubuika, that they had to keep him. I was banging the same drum before when they signed him, because when you have a Chris Jones, not saying he's Chris Jones, but if you have that level of impact potentially, right, you have to keep him in the fold. And they saw the difference in the pass rush when they had the interior pass rush. It was a huge difference, I think, in many, many different ways.
I would agree with that. There was a price at which I'd had to say no to Madubuike, obviously. And in fact, if it was one of the last contracts earned, I probably would have said no and just said, okay, we're moving forward with Pierce and Jones as our 1-3 combination on passing downs. And yeah, that means we are going to have to draft someone. But yeah, it's really interesting because, boy, this team did not look ready to go for 2024 at this time last year. They hadn't signed Broderick Washington yet to the extension, which that may not have worked out. But even so, Brent Urban was going to be a free agent. Pierce was going to be a free agent after the year with a redone contract. And who am I missing here? Who's back now?
I think covered it. All the key players.
Oh, Madubuike.
Madubuike
was outside. So anyway, now the whole band's back together, and they're a year older, so hopefully it won't suffer some decline from those older players like Pearson Urban. But I think it's a fairly optimistic starting point we have on this. We just got to know that not every season is going to be like 2023 in terms of there being no injuries on the defensive line.
Yeah, and to that extent, you know, especially defensive tackles tend to miss games. And so I do like that they made sure, though, that those core fives were in place and intact, and they're running it back. And the thing that's exciting is Jones can take another step. And I think, you know, Washington took a step back last year. What if he comes back to where he was before?
Yeah.
And there's different reasons for that. I think Harbaugh's outlined those reasons. So there's still some wiggle room for even more upside just with those two players alone.
Yeah. One other note, there's, you know, some people want to compare him to Aaron Donald as being, you know, kind of a smaller interior pass rusher. He's not as small as Donald, who is, you know, muscle top to bottom, which he certainly is. And makes him a good penetrating guy. I think the guy who seems more like is Cam Hayward. And I go back to the pressure pyramid again here. Aaron Donald last year had a exceptionally wide, probably, but exactly what you want from a defensive tackle in terms of that pressure pyramid. 11 pressures for every sack. Whereas, you know, Madubuike is at around, I think it's around 3.5 to 1, 43 and 13 and 13 or 13 and a half, whatever he had in terms of sacks this last year. Mm-hmm. So it does raise the question of, can he be the kind of finisher he was without somebody else creating a lot of opportunity for him this next year? But Cam Hayward is maybe a more similar player. I think he had, he benefited from outstanding pass rushers on the outside when he played for Pittsburgh between 17 and 22, not tossing out his 23 season. And I think that's maybe a more reasonable expectation for where Madubuike can play over these next 4 years of the big contract.
I like that. And he's so consistent, and he is always, causing havoc, right, of some kind for offenses in different ways. But, you know, I think, and what's interesting would be where Madubuike lines up, and do they do some different things? I mean, because Cam Hayward is someone I do think see having that versatility, being able to move around different places. And but I know where you're going with it is more just the overall impact and the type of type of player he is. And you would take that every day for the next however long is this contract? 4 years?
4 years.
Yeah, for sure. So I'll take that, no doubt. And the other thing I would say is with Matt Ibike and the Aaron Donald comp, I think the one thing is that I'm not saying he's Donald in this way, although there's only one Donald, but you kind of sometimes the pass rushers heat up and they're coming in waves, right? Snap to snap. And I think Matt Ibike had those moments like where all of a sudden he had one series and he owned it.
Yeah.
Like he was the guy making every, whether it's a sack, whether it's a pressure, and he's capable of that. And that's exciting. It's just dominance in stretches where you can't do anything. He's on the fire, the NBA Jam thing. Like it's just, that's something I think he does bring to the table as a Donald-esque level, not at that height, but just you need somebody like that, right? That he can mm-hmm. do that.
Yep. Yeah, it's he certainly has his stretches, and he's a somewhat streaky player, but you know, made the fact that he had the streak of sacks is a counterexample to his general streakiness, because he, you know, was getting a sack every game on a very consistent basis.
Yeah,
that he's making a play
for sure.
You know, another thing I liked about his last season was the stunt synergies with Pearson Jones in particular, but it's even more. And Matt Ibike is a player who can be an over or under guy on stunts, so he can crash the shoulder of a player after crossing somebody's face. The center usually it would be going to the inside, but you know they've been willing to use Pierce and Jones as both over and under players, and also linebackers. You know, tossing Patrick Queen in there as a pick player mm-hmm. on a fair number of plays was fairly effective. The comical one, I think Tony Dungy might have been doing the game on air, and he caught Patrick Queen finishing a pick on a play where he had a clean lane to the quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah. He stopped and made sure the lane was still yeah. here for the looper.
Fine. Go get the quarterback.
They were so disciplined. That's what that came across for me. And they do have, and I want to see what happens with Kyle Van Noy, right? Because when he was utilized in that way as well in New England, where he was at the line of scrimmage. So that's something I see opening up more from him, because I think they needed him to rush outside a lot more last year. So there's going to be some opportunity maybe to replace some of those picks for Queen that way. We'll see how they do use Trenton Simpson. But to your point, I mean, they come at you in different ways. And they have different versatile options up front to open up pass rush lanes.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about what a good season is for Matt Ibike from your point of view.
I think the good season would probably match up similar to what I mentioned earlier. Like you're still at about eight and a half sacks. You're creating more pressure. I think based on what you've said, the trend suggests that should happen. More influence on pressures and hits. And he plays 14 games this season. He remains a force for them and continues the momentum from last season. But I think that would be a nice sequel, basically, to what was a phenomenal first movie.
Right. All right. So I've got probably a little more muted level, and I'll remind people a good season for me is where I think the 60th percentile might be in terms of the range of outcomes for a player. I'd say despite a reduced sack total, his total pressures are not down significantly. I think if they stayed at the same level, that would actually be good, but I don't think he's going to be able to maintain the sacks with the same total pressures. And his pyramid normalizes. Overall, the Ravens pass rush is still effective with a potent offense and leads to protect, keeping sack totals no lower than the high 40s. So I'm expecting a drop off of some level from 60 for the Ravens sack. Okay. I think I'd for sure take the under on that. Now, 47 or 48 sacks to me is still probably a pretty good season for the Ravens pass rush as a whole. In the 50s would be great, but that's where I would be on the two. His own personal pass rush productivity stays in the top 10 to 12 among all interior defensive linemen. And his missed tackle rate stays good, which is about 10.5% in 2023, despite a reduction in sacks. So, by the way, one thing to look at in terms of tackle ratings on PFF specifically is that interior defensive linemen have not been normalized properly. And all you have to do is go look at the interior defensive linemen and their missed tackle or their tackling grades. And you'll notice the average one is probably around a 48. I mean, they're just they're terrible. Hmm. So don't be too worried about certainly a guy in the 50s is actually probably good. And I think Matabike might have been around 60, which was honestly one of the top ones in the league. So if that stays good, that would be a very good thing.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder why that is. Maybe they just sometimes it's being in such close proximity to the ball. I think
it has to do with how they group the players that they normalize with. So they may include the edge defenders in that IDL group, and the edge defenders look better than the IDL players. Or I'm not sure. It could be multiple methods of not normalizing. It could also be that they're using a standard from a previous year on what they want, and they've changed their definition of what a missed tackle is, so everybody looks bad by the 2023 definition when you're comparing it to, say, 20 to 22.
Right.
So it could be multiple things. Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. You want me to go with the great? All righty. Great would be you're remaining in the double-digit sack realm. I don't think he has to have 13-plus or anything like that, but, you know, again, 11, 12 – maybe slight drop off there. Pressures still go up a tick because I do think, you know, probably the reality is if pressures go up, the snacks probably go down slightly. But they did lose Clowney, so that's like 9.5 sacks right there. And pressures are available, so he'll continue that. And great would be him remaining in, you know, a top five, top six defensive tackle productivity and sheer respect factor level, right? I'm talking about one of the best in the game. And if he was able to do that, you have to be super excited because it's just now he's arrived. If he doesn't quite do that, he'd go to the good season. I'm okay with that too. But again, it gets back to, is he a top five guy? Is he a top 10 to 12 guy? I think he's there anyway. It's just a matter of if he's there and he stays there. So I think the great means he's kind of staying there. And to your point, there's statistical anomalies that probably won't repeat. But I think that's a fair, great season for him.
Yeah, by the way, I'd be really excited. I'd sign up right now if he could have four of my 60th percentile years. And I think what I'm hearing from you is you're saying – a great season this year would be an indication that he's probably going to be at a higher baseline level for the remainder of this time. And we can even, if we were doing the show again next year, we'd be talking about what a good season and great season was and expect more out of it.
Yeah, potentially. Because we are saying great and he's against himself at that point. But I think he would remain in that same zone.
Okay.
Right. And I think he's capable of doing that. I can totally understand there's reasons. And you pointed him out earlier, like he's not only going to get better. I don't necessarily think it's that, right? I think it's more he's figured it out. Now, I'll give you one example, Ken, for example. I think this has been brought up in different interviews with the work he's done with Chuck Smith. He has talked about his hand fighting, his ability to win, and that those moves that he had in his repertoire, that was year one with Chuck Smith, and he's talked about getting even better. So it's possible from that perspective, right? Like these are the things he could do to be even better. Does that translate on the field to the output? I don't necessarily know, but yeah.
It would be great if that did. I can tell you throughout these shows last year, Chuck Smith's name was used so liberally, it scared the hell out of me. But honestly, I think you have to look at it not only in terms of what Chuck Smith provided to a lot of individual players, some of the outside linebackers who were having career years, and some of the inside guys who are clearly having the best years in franchise history. You got to look at that as a tremendous success story. I'd also say the fact that the Ravens were relying on Chuck Smith heavily for their draft choices this year, mm-hmm. and that's the way it's been pegged out there, is that they really wanted to get his input on various pass rushers. I'm very excited about that. It makes him one of the best hires in a long time for the Ravens, and they've had some great coaching hires.
Yeah, I know. When they hired him, I just was pumped, and I didn't even know everything about what he did. I wrote a piece for Russell Street Report that went deep into his background. This was pre-season, by the way, mm-hmm. like before. And I wrote that the objective was to have success with OA and Ojabo. And I was slightly wrong. It ended up being Matt Piqué, but everybody collectively, and that could be the next thing right, this season. But his ability to teach pass rush as an art form, is legit in the academy, and all the results, and him working with Von Miller and Aaron Donald. So they took a bit of a gamble that singular move would really almost unleash these players, and it did, and to their credit. But between that and also, of course, McDonald's scheme. Right. So, yeah.
That's great value. All right, I'll get into my great season in 24 in a second. I want to read the great season from 23 because there's some right and there's some wrong in here, and it's worth going back to. Great season for 2023, becomes a voracious pass rush presence regardless of snap burden. Because remember, I was saying that it would be a lower snap count would be good for him. So that was the point where I was definitely wrong on. That includes lots of success with stunts and schemed one-on-one wins. I think I hit that part. Draws attention of defenses, which improves chances for other pass rushers. Just the opposite. The other pass rushers drew a lot of the attention, create a lot of the first pressures. Matt Abike became probably the single best cleanup player in the entire league. Got fantastic pursuit, and that's something we really got to be happy with. Great season for 2024. Looking forward, becomes an even more effective pass rusher in terms of success with one-on-one wins versus guards, stunts, and other lineup matches, which create more pressure even with reduced sacks. And again, a few more pressures, I think no matter what, it's going to be a reduced sack total. Continues to draw attention of offenses which don't have enough assets to block all of the Ravens' quality IDL without relying on one-on-one play. And hey, guess what? You can't double-team everybody. Ravens' team sack total drops only into the 50s, and Matt Abike threatens a double-digit year again. Won't necessarily get there. He might finish with 8 or 9. That's fine. But the important thing is that the Ravens' sack total only drops into the 50s, and I'm okay with anywhere in the 50s. That would be exciting. 50, 52, whatever it might be.
Yeah, totally. Well, that, I mean, I would be ecstatic with that. And that would also give an indication that they're at this level now, and they're not going to fall back, right? As one of the best pass rushing units in the league, which is what they needed to get to, I think, to take that next step on defense.
Yeah, it's certainly puttied over some real shortcomings at cornerback this last year to have a great pass rush and have McDonald's scheme really with lots of oversight for those cornerbacks on the back end. And frankly, to give up some things in the run game that were a fantastic trade-off. You know, they became very un-Ravens-like in terms of their run defense.
Yeah, and so Chuck Smith and I believe Anthony Weaver talked about that last season, is that was something they needed to, I don't know if they put it as convinced Harbaugh on, but there was a dialogue that this is what we want. We want to be able to get to the quarterback, and that's going to take a different mentality shift, right? And he embraced it, and he trusted them, and I think the results are fitting, and I think they're actually that is where you needed to go, right? And they did. So I totally thought that was also, that's a credit to Harbaugh. That's a credit to the coaching staff as well. Yeah.
All right. Dev, always a pleasure to talk football with you. Thanks so much for coming on. Where can folks contact you online? I know you're very active on Twitter/X or read your stuff.
Yeah. And thanks for having me. This was awesome. They can get in touch with me at Dev Panchois on Twitter. And then kind of quiet right now for Russell Street Report activity, but look out for, I usually have my random features that come up, and then I've got, during the season, I write a piece with Nikhil Mehta, and that is called Battle Plans, and that's been an institution for don't know. You know about battle plans. Ken's been 10,
sure. Long time.
15 years running. So we'll keep it going this this season. I came back to it, and that was an incredibly enjoyable experience with him. And we'll keep that going as well in the fall. But I think in before that, you might see some features here and there if they come up.
Okay. Lots of respect for Nikhil as well. He's on our draft show and someone I always look to for various series when we're doing the Ravens. Dev, I hope we can get you back on maybe during the preseason, maybe once, maybe during the regular season as well, once for the offense or defense show. But it's always fun to break down a game in detail with you after the fact. I know your schedule doesn't always allow it. How's fatherhood treating you?
Oh, it's been great. In terms of schedule, yeah, that can be tricky, but just trying to make every minute, every second count with my little guy, and it's wonderful, satisfying, and it's incredible. And it's only been time has flown. I guess it's been 2 years already, so I'm just trying to savor every day because he's getting older.
All right,
but I appreciate you always being patient and always extending that invite. And we do these shows every once in a while, and it's always the quality versus quantity from that standpoint. So,
all right, I appreciate that, and we'll hopefully get you back on. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. We can talk about anything you want, but I do have a concerns series coming up. So if you have a concern about the Baltimore Ravens entering training camp, hit me up with what that concern is. And naturally, all Ravens fans, all football fans who are, you know, at a certain level in terms of being focused on the game, have concerns about their team no matter what. And it's amazing the kind of concerns we can manufacture. And sometimes it creates a great episode to talk about that. And I'd love to have you on, particularly if you haven't been on before. But even if you have, that's great as well. Dev, thanks a lot again for coming on.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.